When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call him a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
It's hell time, man. It's hell time, man. It's hell time, man. It's hell time, man. Down these streets, the fools rule. There's no freedom or self-respect. A knife's point or a trip to the joint is about all you can expect. This is Bob Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan, one song at a time. I'm your host of Freewheeling, Rob Kelly. And joining me to talk about Band of the Hand, a.k.a. It's Hell Time, Man, the title cut from the soundtrack to the 1986 film Band of the Hand, is fellow Bobcat Matt Simonson. Hi, Matt. Welcome back.
Thanks, Rob. I'm happy to be back.
Oh, I am so excited to be talking about this song. How did we come to this conclusion, right? How did we, I don't remember. How did you, we both kind of were settled that you were like, oh man, this one. And I was like, oh yeah, we have it. Let's do, how did we, do you remember how that even came about?
Yeah, I think after the last time I was on Union Sundown and you said to me, we need more disregarded 80s songs on Pod Dylan. And we said, hey, nobody's talking about Band of the Hand, so let's give that one a spin.
No, that sounds about right. Yeah, that I look, this song, it's, I love this song. I really do. I really love this song. It's bonkers. It's goofy as all get out. It's attached to a movie that no one remembers. It is sort of bizarre about, like, how would Bob even get himself attached to this thing? It is a strange little asterisk in the Dylan canon in that it does not appear on any collection. It exists solely, it was released as a single, backed with an instrumental song from the film's soundtrack. And it was, of course, you know, you can listen to it in the movie itself. And then we'll get into, you know, what other life it's had outside of that. Not much, but it's very easily the kind of song that even diehard Bob fans do not know exist.
Yeah, I think they're, you're probably going to have a few longtime listeners who are scratching their head and saying, where did this come from? Did I miss this one? but certainly the, you know, the classic rock Bob Dylan fan is not heard of this one. And there's probably a lot of people who own most of the CDs who don't have this on regular rotation or even on the radar. But for us nut jobs, I mean, this is right in our wheelhouse, Rob.
Absolutely. You can get it on like Spotify and on iTunes. You know, it is available there. You can get it there. And it's, you know, so it is part of his collection. But yeah, this thing is very, and it has an amazing pedigree when you think about it, because it was recorded in Australia back when Bob was touring with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. So Tom Petty is the officially listed producer of this record, and playing on the song are all the Heartbreakers, Mike Campbell and Ben Montench, and you know, all those guys, and singing backup, there's a bunch of backup singers, but singing backup apparently is also Stevie Nicks. So
yeah,
I mean,
I
never knew that until I looked it up, because I don't hear her on the finished song. But I mean, what an all-star lineup of people for such an obscure song.
Well, this is a who's who. This must have been recorded before she was deported or threatened to be deported for working without a visa when they brought her up on stage a few times. So
that's right. That's right. That was the thing that happened, was that she came and sang with Bob a couple times. And I guess the Australian government was like, you can't do that. We're going to kick you out. I was like, you can't kick out Stevie Nicks. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, one of the cool things about this song on my home device, when I ask Alexa to fire this one up, it'll repeat it. And it says that it's by Bob Dylan and the Heartbreaker.
Oh, that's
my knowledge. It's the only song officially attributed to Bob Dylan and the Heartbreaker.
What an awesome combination that is. Yeah, this song, I mean, for those of you who don't know about the Band of the Hand, the movie, and we will get into it at the end of the show after we're done talking about the song, but it's a 1986 movie about a basically gang of street toughs that are trained to go from being gang members to kind of like law enforcement and you know, clean up the streets of this, you know, vicious drug lord and things like that. And so the song itself seems to be written from the point of view of the band, you know, the titular band of the hand, basically. And it's this incredibly righteous, kind of nasty, violent song about cleaning up the streets and the idea of that the law is not going to protect you. Everything is corrupt, but we, the band of the hand or whatever, we're the ones that are going to clean everything up. It's so upfront, and it's kind of just everything is black and white. This is we are morally right, and we're going to commit violence on people that are dope dealers and stuff like that. And that's the universe this song lives in.
I have been thinking about Band of the Hand in an unhealthy manner for
it's a
the
sentence
last couple
that's
of days.
Very rarely uttered. I've been thinking about Band of the Hand,
and I'm like, how can I best describe this? And, you know, a couple of things jumped to mind. And one was, it's like the times they are changing with vigilante justice, kind of a call to arms, you know, the youth, you know, taking over. And another one is just kind of the sonic equivalent of the Empire Burlesque jacket on the cover. Full of 80s. It's got that Miami Vice vibe. And, you know, like with all the stuff in the news going on, Rob, with AI, it dawned on me. I mean, this is like somebody went to ChatGPT and tried to create a composite Bob Dylan song with all the cliches from his past. And then they said, you know, write me a song about America in the period from 2016 to 2020 in the style of New Pony and Miami Vice. And, you know, include a social justice message about fighting people in power and add some electric blues. Harmonica, give me some Desire era internal rhymes, and I want some wordplay like in No Time to Think, and give me some call and response from the Queens of Rhythm like in the gospel period. Just adding all this stuff up, and then it spits this out, and it's just got everything in it that we love about Bob Dylan, which is why this song is so crazy. And then when I look at the lyrics, when we go through them, there's all these things that jump out to me where it seems self-referential, where he's like, oh, that reminds me of this song. That reminds me of this song. And I love this song. It may, in fact, be the greatest Bob Dylan song ever recorded because it's so self-referential to everything else that he did. It's like it exists within its own world. I don't know anything else like it. Hell time, man.
Well, it's worth mentioning, by the way, that on this song is listed on bobdylan.com, that it has even been rewritten a little bit, in that if you listen to the song, it opens with the chorus, very She Loves You, and it opens with the chorus of, you know, the Queens of Rhythm wailing, it's Hell Time, Man. But if you look it up on bobdylan.com, they've changed the refrain from It's Hell Time, Man to Band of the Hand. But that's not what they're singing. They're not singing Band of it. They're singing It's Hell Time, Man. And I'm guessing that, you know, the producers commissioned Bob to do this, and then Bob goes off and writes his own song and completely leaves out the phrase Band of the Hand in any way. And they were like, okay,
help here, Bob.
Bob, it's not called It's Hell Time, Man. It's called Band of the Hand. They're like, okay, close enough. But it's so strange that, yeah, did somebody actually bother to go into bobdylan.com and rewrite this a little so it fits the movie? But like, at this point, who cares? Like, who's paying attention to this?
It reminds me of my favorite Ray Parker Jr. story, when his agent called him up and said, hey, Ray, there's this really cool movie coming out with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, and they want you to write the hit song for it. He's like, oh, that's great. And he's like, there's just two catches, though. One, you have to have it done over the weekend. You need to have it ready by Monday. And Ray said, oh, yeah, shouldn't be a problem. No problem. What's the other one? It has to contain the word Ghostbusters in it. And I think that's probably something similar where, like, you're right. He wrote this amazing song, and they're like, you know, we really need Band of the Hand in there somehow. So he changed it, you know, and put It's Hell Time, Man in parentheses. And then at the end of the song, the Queens of Rhythm do actually say Band of the Hand.
You mentioned the gospel sound to it, and it does have that. I love the opening, the laugh. I'm guessing that's one of the Queens of Rhythm. I mean, like, to me, this has a, it does have a very gospel, like, you could picture this on Saved in like a parallel universe.
Absolutely. Or Slow Train Coming. I mean, this fits right next to Slow Train Coming, you know, just that indictment of the world, and the wicked are going to get it, and I'm going to give it to a message.
Right, because it's old, so Old Testament, you know, it's so like God is going to come down and smite the criminals, you know, the people that are doing the wicked things. And that is what I love about, again, the morality of it is so just so simplistic, but you're caught up in the performance of it. I mean, I quoted the opening verse, and then there was, they kill people here who stand up for their rights. The system's just too damned corrupt. It's always the same. The name of the game is, who do you know higher up? And then it's a hell time man, the hell time man. So yeah, you've got those internal rhymes that you talked about.
Those are all over, even from, you know, the title, Band of the Hand.
Band of the Hand, yeah.
It's got it. But yeah, and then, you know, at the end, when I love that verse, by the way, it's always the same, the name of the game, who do you know higher up? And then when you listen to it, he lets out a big, well, which rhymes with, it's hell time, right into it. So, I mean, the song, there's just... It reminds me of Desire a little bit, and Hurricane, you know, I mean, that's one of the better songs with the internal rhyming, and on Street Legal as well. I mean, it's just all over the lyrics, and I don't know. I really enjoy that when he does it. I think he's very, very crafty when it comes to slipping in internal rhymes and into the meter and everything.
It has a wonderful, like, slickness to it, which is just super fun to listen to. And, you know, you mentioned about like how many seems to be like this kind of like a chat GPT version, because you could sort of, you know, the bit about, it's always the same. The name of the game is, who do you know higher up? I mean, that could be a line from Hurricane. That almost is a line from Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. You know, the ladder of the law has no top and no bottom. So it is, it's like, it's referring to, it's not directly referring, but it's, you know, seems to be referring to past Dylan songs. It may not be exactly, but you could imagine, yeah, that somebody is like, okay, well, this is a guy, he's in his mid-40s at this point, and he's railing against the injustice of the system. This is maybe what Bob Dylan would write. So I could see that.
Exactly. You know, like, it opens up down the street, you know, the dogs aren't barking, like in One Too Many Mornings, down these streets, the fools rule. You know, right away, I mean, there's something in there that kind of reminds me of One Too Many Mornings. And then it just keeps going on and on and on.
The blacks and the whites steal the other kids' lives. Wealth is a filthy rag. So erotic, so unpatriotic, so wrapped up in the American flag. Again, that could be right out of Clean Cut Kid, you know, which he wrote around the same time.
That's a case where they changed the lyrics on BobDylan.com too, because in the song he says the blacks and the whites, the idiotic, the exotic.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and so that to me, no time to think. Right when he's going through and listing all the big words that rhyme and dropping those in there, and
duality, reality.
Yeah, exactly. And then I thought, wealth is a filthy rag. You know, if you ask ChatGPT, give me a 5-word summary for the Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, that's probably what it would spit out. So my mind's been racing with all of these things. And, you know, probably, as I mentioned, an unhealthy amount of listening to the song over the last couple of days. But that's what we're here for, Rob.
Exactly. It makes me wonder, like, when he was commissioned, like, did he see the movie? I mean, you know what I mean? He's a busy guy. I mean, does he have time? I mean, this is 1986. That was a lot harder to do than it would be nowadays. I would imagine you hire somebody to write a song for your movie, you just send them a Vimeo link, you know, or whatever, and they can watch it. But in 1986, you had to, like, at the very least, ship them a videotape. And he was in Australia by then. That might have been a real. So I'm guessing he didn't see the movie. Even if maybe they had wanted him to see the movie, would he have bothered? He probably could have just been like, what's it about? Okay, all right, I got it. You know, I'll go to the studio and I'll
You're exactly it. Right. Yeah, give me a summary. Give me a one-line summary and I'll take it from there.
The witchcraft scum. I mean, come on. The witchcraft scum exploiting the dumb turns children into crooks and slaves whose heroes and healers are rich. Now, by the way, they've changed it again here. When in the line that he sings is, whose heroes and healers are rich dope dealers who should be put in their graves. Here it says, whose heroes and healers are real stoned dealers, which is just not as good a line. Real stoned dealers is not as good as dope dealers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, put them in their graves, just like in Masters of War.
Masters of War, right?
Robert just goes on and on. So
I hadn't really thought of that before, but you're right. It really does feel like this is, this really is. You took a bunch of Bob Dylan lyrics and you just shook them in a box, you know, and then you pulled them out and you're like, okay, this is what it is. And again, the line about who should be put in their graves. I mean, that's pretty out there for to have someone sing, like, be so blunt about the people that are out there that are exploiting the dumb and they're turning children into crooks and slaves. They should be murdered, not put on trial, not put in jail, not put through the system. They should straight up be murdered by us. I mean, it's pretty startling.
Yeah, this is the iron hand of justice coming out of his voice here. For sure, which fits right into that late 70s, early 80s gospel period. For I mean, nothing's really changed in his view. We really like it when he puts it in black and white terms for us. I mean, everybody likes the Bob Dylan edge.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's good. You know, I mean, when you like that feeling of sort of authority, like he's been around, he's seen everything. So he's laying it on the line. Here's what it is. Come on. Let's not mince words here. They should be put in their graves. You know, like, whoa. What part is it? If that, there's one part where he even says, tell the truth now. He fits that in right before he gets into the chorus. He slips that in.
But like the back and forth with the backup singers, it's just great. I mean, it's spot on the timing and it seems like he's just ad-libbing and they're in it. And it's really, I mean, say what you will about the movie or the 80s or the style, but the performance in this song is just incredible. I mean, he's invested vocally. The lyrics are fun, and his delivery is just great. The music sounds awesome, too. And the backup singers, I don't know if they've ever sounded better than they sound in this one.
I mean, they are wailing.
They are. I mean, they're having a grand old time, for sure.
So in the next verse, the next verse is, listen to me, Mr. Pusherman. This might be the last night in a bed so soft. There are pimps on the make, politicians on the take. You can't pay us off. Okay, so I'm going to admit something to you, Matt. Up until BobDylan.com came out, and I could leave.
I know what you're going to admit.
Okay. Oh, what do you think I'm going to admit?
Well, I think he says, listen to me, Mr. Pussyman.
That I always thought that's what the line was. I thought, Bob, Bob, you're really pretty. Okay, Bob. Like, I mean, Bob only curses sparingly. You know, I think there's only two other songs where he uses any sort of four letter words, Hurricane and George Jackson. But yeah, for the longest time, when I heard that line, it really sounds like he says, listen to me, Mr. Pussy Man. I was like, this is,
and with all the rewrites on BobDylan.com, I'm not convinced it's not what he says, because it's it's one of those funny names he gives people, like Miss Dolly, or all the other kind of funny names he gives Miss Lucy or Aunt Sally. He's got all these names for people in these songs that kind of make you laugh, and it just catches you, right? Because you're like, is this like some kind of like girly man, or is this some kind of ladies man, or some combination of both? It's just kind of a very interesting title to give to somebody, for sure. Gets your attention.
I thought I was alone in the universe that I heard him say that. So I'm really glad that I'm not the only person that heard it.
Spirits. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love this line. This might be the last night in a bed so soft. Like, it's such a wonderfully menacing phrase, because it's conjuring up the rich and the powerful, and he lives in this drug dealer lives in this big house, and you know, he wants for nothing, and it's like, this might be your last night in a bed so it's the language in this is just so wonderfully purple. I'm just having so much fun even just reading it over again.
Yeah. And, I live in the Minneapolis, area. And so when I was really thinking about this song and playing it a lot. Was that a period I mentioned earlier, that 2016 to 2020 period, with the George Floyd incident and everything going on with Donald Trump. And this verse really reminds me of Donald Trump, you know, the grabber in chief, and all of the you know, controversy and everything in that line. This might be the last night in a bed so soft, you know, indicates to me that you're going to jail or someplace worse very soon. You know, and then, you know, we're not pimps on the make or politicians on the take. It's just very descriptive of that period that we just got through, of the Trump presidency, and, you know, all of the different media reports. And this song just, you know, it was written in 86, but 30 years later, it's still hyper relevant to what was going on in the world, especially where I was living up in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I mean, witchcraft scum exploiting the dumb. I mean, that's the timeline we're living in right now, is that?
Yeah.
I mean, for Pete's sakes. And then he continues on. He says, we're going to blow up your home of voodoo. Again, blow your home of voodoo. What a great, like,
yeah.
I mean, he's going back with the witchcraft and watch it burn without any regret. We got the power. We're the new government. You just don't know it yet. It's like, ah, yes. That's so good. And,
oh, yeah.
And that feels like something that could have been out of, not to, I'm sorry, times here are a changing. You know,
yeah,
we got
I
the
actually,
power, we're the new government. You just don't know it yet. That's.
Yeah, you just don't know it yet. Straight out of Ballad of a Thin Man.
Oh.
So there's something going on here, but you don't know what it is.
Oh.
Absolutely. You know, watching it burn without any regret. I mean, all of the protests and the riots, we literally had places burning down up in Minnesota, and all that period was just you know, it just comes through in the song. Yeah, the new government, this whole, you know, you have the QAnon conspiracy theories, you know, and then COVID came and everyone's talking about Bill Gates tracking everybody through vaccines, and the whole world just went nuts all over the place in this period. And then I'm like, my God, it's all in this song. I mean, he wrote it 30 years earlier.
And for a movie that nobody saw, you know,
yeah.
I mean, like for a movie, it's kind of fun. Well, okay. You know what? We'll talk about it when we get to the end of it. Cause I'm where he could, what he could have done with the song if he wanted to. But so the next verse, for all of my brothers from Vietnam and my uncles from World War II, I've got to say that it's countdown time now. We're going to do what the law should do. I always find that kind of interesting. Like he's almost like giving it like a historical perspective of kind of the idea that these are people that fought for their country to kind of not, and this is the result, you know, it's almost like a little bit like, well, this is unfulfilled promise. These are people who lost their life again, like the clean cut kid, you know, went off and served. And, but now it's finally happening. It's countdown time. Now we're going to do what the law should do. Like, I love this idea of sort of saying, you know, you weren't delivered the country that you were promised that you fought for, but we're going to do it. And so he gives
yeah,
it this wonderful historical context by mentioning World War II and Vietnam.
Yeah. Like with God on our side, where he kind of goes through all the things, and then, yeah, like gone are the, you know, come senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Now it's like, we're going to do what the law should do. he's taking matters into his own hands.
Oh my God. And then the final verse, and here it says, he said, for you, pretty baby. He doesn't sing that, right? He said, it's a different line in the song.
No, he does say,
pretty baby?
Baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for you, pretty baby, I know your story is too painful to share. One day though, you'll be talking in your sleep. And when you do, I want to be there now.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, wow. Yes. Now that line, the final two lines, has been sourced from a movie, and it's from the 1941 movie, I Wake Up Screaming, starring Betty Grable. It's a film noir. And there's a line in it where someone says, one day you'll be talking in your sleep, and when you do, I want to be around. And so we know that during, especially on Empire Burlesque, Bob was cribbing a lot of lines from old Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that he would do it here. I am so charmed with the idea of Bob Dylan watching old movies in the 80s, you know, like with his VHS cassettes piling up and you know, hearing this line spoken by, spoken by an actor named Laird Krieger, who was a staple of film noir movies, this giant hulking brute of a man. And he's very threatening in the scene, but I just love the idea of Bob watching that movie and then just kind of going and just storing that line in the back of his head. And then he uses it here and it ends the song on such a wonderfully threatening note. And yet he's singing it with such kind of like a lilt in his voice, like this charming, joy. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be talking to you. And when you do, I want to be there. Like, oh, man.
And then he lets out the most emphatic yeah of his career right after that. And the song, everything comes together at that point. The music, the backup singers, Bob screaming. It just builds up to that release point in the song. It's the perfect ending of any Bob Dylan song.
Oh,
I think
it is so fun. And I was not able to find any information about this recording session outside of the fact that Tom Petty served as producer. And as we said, the Heartbreakers are playing on it and you've got the Queens of Rhythm and Stevie Nicks doing backup. I can't imagine that this was one take, right? You would have to think there was at least another couple of stabs at it, whether they were complete, I don't know. I would kill to hear alternate takes of Band of the Hand. I really would, because I can't picture anybody starting a session with just one song at this energy level. Like I would think you have to build up to this.
I would think so too. The Washington Post interview that came out a little while ago by Jeff Slate. Mm-hmm. Did you happen to read that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was probably one of the best interviews I've ever read. I had a chance to meet Jeff down in Tulsa. Really nice guy. But he was quoted as saying he had a chance to look at some manuscripts down in the archive. And he said that there were, you know, pages and pages of lyrics for Band of the Hand. Just all indictment of, you know, this type of, you know, CIA, 80s drug, Iran-Contra type of motif that Bob had written. And then, you know, hand-selected some of these lyrics. Mm. So I'm sure there are outtakes, and they may have alternate lyrics.
Oh,
how wonderful would that be?
Oh, give me a whole bootleg session. Bootleg series.
I could take it.
Band of the Hand, volume 19, Band of the Hand. I mean, just... Oh yeah. My God, I can't. I mean, yeah. It's mentioned. The session is mentioned in Clinton Halen's Bob Dylan Day by Day book, and according to to Halen, who knows if that's, you know, written a long time ago, but he says that other songs were attempted. So you know, who knows whether that was other Band of the Hands or whether that was other songs that him and Tom Petty were batting around, and maybe there were other covers. But that, I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, we've got to hear those. We've got to hear. Come on, Sony. I know you said you're winding down the bootleg series, but find a way to jam these into something. You know, stick them on a disc four at the end of a disc four on some of these sets, because I really have got to hear the other, whatever was done that afternoon. Because this is just, it's like a party song, but via fire and brimstone.
Yeah, exactly. Down in Tulsa, they've refurbished some of the Hard to Handle video.
Oh, right.
I think they have When the Night Comes Falling from the Sky playing on rotation, and it just looks incredible. And have you seen the concert Hard to Handle?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I mean, what better idea than to release a bootleg series of that tour? Loaded mm-hmm. with outtakes of Band of the Hand.
Oh, God. What this so bad?
This five, nothing but Band of the Hand. Yeah. More band, more hand.
There we go. We're doing Sony's job for it, Matt. We're marketing it. There we go. Perfect.
For free. We'll do it for free. We'll even go through and we'll listen to all the takes and pick the best ones.
We'll write the liner notes. We'll do it for, yeah, we'll do it. Absolutely do it for free. What I was mentioning earlier was, you know, we know that Bob recorded some songs for Hearts of Fire, another dubious film project that he attached himself to. And some of those songs that were written for that soundtrack made it onto Down in the Groove, because, as we know, he was probably kind of hurting for material for that record. And so he obviously didn't have any compunctions about saying, well, I'll take it. Yeah, we already appeared on a soundtrack, but I can take it and put on one of my own records. This should have been on, couldn't have been on Empire Burlesque, because Burlesque was before this. Although I think it would fit quite nicely on Empire Burlesque. But at the very least, this should have been on Knocked Out Loaded. I mean, that's not, that record only has 8 songs. You know, yeah, it's got Brownsville Girl, and that counts as like 3 songs. But this, the fact that he would record this and then just let it, I mean, you know, he does that all the time with a lot greater songs than this, kind of. But this just, I don't know, this deserves something much better than the unmarked grave that it has been given on Band of the Hand.
Yeah, if it was on Down in the Groove, it would have been, you know, the standout track for sure, just like Brownsville Girls. But yeah, to never get re-released. And, you know, fortunately, it's streaming for people who don't have the single or, you know, God forbid, the whole Band of the Hand soundtrack. But everyone can listen to it if they just go to Spotify, or I'm sure it's on YouTube as well.
It is on YouTube. Yeah, it is on YouTube. Now, according to BobDylan.com, again, I got to stop relying on this site so much, because then there's, I think Bob himself writes this site, the way it's littered with errors. Bob apparently has learned to code. But it says here, it has been performed 0 times live. That is not correct. It was done with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers at a benefit for Amnesty International in 1986. And then it was done, apparently, again, according to Clinton Halen's Day by Day book, it was the first song of the encore on June 11th, 1986 at a show in Reno, Nevada. Now, I could not find either one of those versions, which frustrated me mightily, because I really want to hear alts of this. But yeah, there are, I mean, I know maybe they don't count the Amnesty International show, because they seem to not count gigs that are not strictly Bob Dylan concerts.
So if you'll forgive me, it's actually been performed live 33 times in total. And don't ask me how I know that. I listened to 33 versions of it this week. But yeah, you're right. Amnesty International, he opens with it for his portion. That was the first time he played it. And then I think the last time that he played it was the concert where he played Brownsville Girl for the only time.
When you say 33 times, really?
Yeah, he played it quite a bit. He played it in Philly in 86 a couple of times, and all over the place. So from June 6th all the way to, you know, the beginning of August, he played it.
Do you have bootlegs of these shows, Matt?
I may have some. I'll send you some links after we get done.
How could they be that far off on the website?
I am not sure. Maybe they searched by It's Hell Time Man or something like that. And maybe they searched for the lyrics of Bob singing Band of the Hand, and it came up 0 because he never sings it. Never once mentions it live.
I'm genuinely stunned. I had no idea it was performed that many times.
So and then the fun thing is he gets into this little routine a lot of times, where when he's gearing up, he'll say, "All right, now, anybody know what time it is? What's that? What time is it? That's right. It's hell time, man."
Oh my God.
But he did it enough. It was like he was trying to make it a thing almost.
You all know what time it is, right?
You all know what time it is, right? You've all seen the movie. You all bought the soundtrack. You know what time it is. But I wrote down some of the interesting things that he would say either before or after. And one time in Berkeley on 14th of June, he starts out and he says, "I want to dedicate this to Saint Annie. I hope she's here tonight. If she is, ask her to forgive me, please."
Oh, my. Like,
Saint Annie, what, from just like Tom Bell's Blue?
Yeah, so Sweet Annie, thanks a lot. Yeah.
So we're one clue closer to knowing who she is and where she lives. And then on the 21st of June, he says, "We've got a song for you. Wrote a song for a movie. Sometimes the truth can be stranger than fiction." Then he goes into it. And then I wrote down a couple. On the 19th of July in Philadelphia, he gets done. He does his – by then he had kind of worked up his routine about asking everybody what time it is. And And at the end, he gets done. He says, "Okay, it's hell time, man. Now, if anybody asks you what time it is, day or night, what are you going to say?" "It works," he says. "Doesn't matter. You won't be lying."
He really was trying to make it a thing, wasn't he?
He was. So I like to bring things full circle here. So this one's from the 20th, the next night in Philadelphia. So he starts out and he says, "Okay, anybody out there know what time it is? Ha ha, yeah, ha ha. All right, now, you know," and he plays it. And at the end, he gets done and he says, "Now, tell me if this sounds familiar." He goes, "Okay, now, it gives us a lot of pleasure to play here in the city of the Liberty Bell, and Benjamin Franklin, too. Is his house still there? Any of his family still there? Anyway, that was called Hell Time, Man." So he didn't even name it right. He goes, "But we won't be doing that song too much longer. There's a magazine called Spin Magazine, and they pan that song. So it's got, don't have too much reality to it. That's what they say. You people here will be the last people almost to hear that song. So if anybody asks you in the future years to come, did you hear it? You can say you heard it here."
Oh, he was downright loquacious about this song.
Yeah, so I mean, let's just scorch the earth here. John Leland from Spin Magazine, 1986, August 16th episode, was the author. So I looked up the Internet Archive for Spin Magazine. You know, here's the quote from him. He starts out quoting down the streets, "The fools rule there's no freedom or self-respect, the knife's point or a trip to the joints, about all you can expect." He says, "Dylan's mythological street epic is as far removed from reality as any of his recent music and as stylized as Miami Vice. And it's so far off the mark that it almost works. Tom Petty's irredeemably lame heartbreakers camp up, or more probably fake, a sloppy gospel groove. Banded the handoffers 12/8 time and organ and harmonies as a symbol of the apocalypse, and the formula is recognizable enough to work even in such a perfunctory workout. But Dylan's so obviously intent on painting a sordid scene that he invests his apocalyptic scum with bald affection, which is where these stylized street epics generally go astray. The record sleeve doesn't tell you, but you also get a sub Jan Hammer instrumental by Michael Rubini on the B-side. Some things are best left unsaid." And then the next night, he dropped it from the set list and replaced it with, you guessed it, everybody's favorite 80s song, Union Sundown.
Time is a flat circle. That
it is.
That's amazing.
So for him
what
to
a
read
great
that,
find, man. That's
For him to read it, call the guy out on stage, and basically make this guy, responsible for ending the gravy train everybody was on. I mean, he was building a thing. I mean, who knows today what time is it? It's hell time, man. Could be as big as Where's the Beef from the 80s. John Leland not wrecked it.
We could be wearing Bob Dylan tour shirts with "It's Hell Time, Man" as the catchphrase.
It's Hell Time, Man. Absolutely. So that's John Leland. He really kind of screwed everybody over. Yes.
Well,
me.
John, if you're listening, I hope you're proud of yourself, buddy. I just looked up those two dates, the Philly dates, and they just don't list the song at all. So I'm guessing there'd be no way to catalog every date. Because there's not recordings of every one of them. Maybe there's a record of them, but maybe that's why, like you're talking about, that's why they're not listed. Although it just seems amazing to me that they would miss it that many times. I mean, it's one thing if it was performed two or three times and the BobDylan.com misses it, but 33?
Well, I thought that was odd too. Cause normally they're pretty accurate, but
yeah.
But I mean, someone took the time and the effort to go in and write or edit some of the lyrics officially, but they kind of had a huge miss. So yeah, this was put out live with the Heartbreakers and the Queens of Rhythm.
Well, I love it even more now that it's like this weird blotted out memory thing. Like it happened, but it didn't really happen because there's no record of it. But yet there is. Like he really was trying to turn it into a thing, and all because somebody at Spin mouthed off, he buried it. Which is a damn shame because it's
no. This
awesome.
Is gaslighting. This is highway robbery here. The fans demand better, right? We want an investigation.
But
it's interesting playing it live. A lot of times he would follow it up right into When the Night Comes Falling from the Sky, which is just, you know, one fire and brimstone song into another. And then other nights he'd kick into Lonesome Town from Ricky Nelson, which
okay.
I don't know about you, but those aren't two that I, you know, usually when he swaps a song out for another, it's of the same kind of vibe. But I get a different vibe from those two songs. I'm not sure about everybody, but really get the same vibe for me.
That is a marvelous find, Matt. I had no idea. I had no clue. I mean, you know, did you just happen to have, all right, we'll talk about your bootleg collection off the air. well, that, oh man. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. This song. It's so fun. It's just this
live. He, you know, he skips the Mr. Pusher Man verse every time. He never
sings
that verse live. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So he always just does the first ones, and but the lyrics are true to the original recording otherwise. But yeah, this song, like I said, just every time I listen to it, there's something else that jumps out to me that reminds me of another one of his songs. And I forgot to mention it, but like on the last verse, when we were talking about, you know, going to do what the law should do, and it kind of reminds you of the times they are changing. The part about you, pretty baby, I know you've seen it all. I know your story is too painful to share. That reminds me of As I Went Out One Morning, you know, because there are people that have said that that song is kind of an allegory about the United States and in the quagmire of Vietnam and Pompeii apologizing to the person, you know, as a founder of starting the country, what, you know, I'm sorry for what she's done, you know, kind of using, you know, woman as country metaphor. And I think that applies here as well. If you think about that, especially as you get into the next line, you know, if you kind of think the government, the CIA, and then he goes, one day though, you'll be talking in your sleep. And when you do, I want to be there. To me, that just reminds me of his mindset with Murder Most Foul, you know, the Kennedy assassination. Like, what does the government know? You know, the whole just say no. War on Drugs, which is all over the background of this song. I think it's fantastic. And then, you know, the last thing he says on this recording is not in the lyrics, but it's in the chorus when he and the Queens of Rhythm are going back and forth. And I mentioned it kind of sounds a little bit like New Pony a little bit. It's kind of got that dirty blue kind of sound to it. And the last thing he says after they're singing Band of the Hand, It's Hell Time Man, he goes, it won't be long, honey.
Mm-hmm.
And it just reminds me of New Pony when the background singers were saying, how much longer? How much longer? And he's like, it won't be long. I mean, he's riding the end of the world train in the engine. I mean, he's blowing the whistle. he's waving at the people to get off the track. And it's my favorite. It's my favorite style of Bob. I just love it. When he's got a cross to bear and a grudge to hold. I just think he's at his best.
And it's not dour. You know, that's one of the nice, it's not like, oh, everything sucks. It's terrible. It's so spirited, you know, it's so lusty. It's so unabashed in its jingoistic, simplistic morality. You know, it's kind of from a different political view, but it's the same idea of kind of what made Arnold Schwarzenegger like a star in the 80s. This idea of like this big muscle man will just take a gun and murder all the bad people and our problems will be solved. It's that same kind of idea. And that's the reason Arnold, it's the reason Arnold became a star is because he had that grin doing it. You know, there was like other guys that tried to replicate what he did and they weren't able to do it because he had that glint in his eye. And that's what this song has. It just has that just wonderful fire and brimstone preacher sort of thing. And so, it's just such a weird.
Exactly. Arnold's got that, that combination of, pro America ass kicking and witty one liner. And, you know, Bob's kind of, this is his version of that, you know, one liners all over the place and he's kicking ass and taking names. And, you know, I'm not sure about, if he's pro anything here, I mean, he's kind of calling everybody out. But it's just great. It's absolutely great. And actually there's some kind of connection loose, between, some of the producers of the movie and, Arnold Schwarzenegger, which we can talk about later.
Well, that's a good segue, Matt. Thank you very much. Is we are going to do something now. I mean, everyone knows we have moved Pod Dylan over to the FM podcast network, and we're very happy to be over on this new music-centric podcast network. So something that we're going to do, we've never done this before, but next week, Matt will be back with me and another Pod Dylan regular to discuss the Band of the Hand movie. We're going to review the movie. Bob did the theme song or whatever, and so it's part of his history. So we are going to review the movie. But I decided we are going to make that a premium-only episode, which basically means you have to go over to fmpods.com and subscribe, become a paying subscriber, and to the premium version of Pod Dylan, Pod Dylan Plus, as we call it, and that will get you that episode. And I guarantee it's going to be a lot of fun. And so it's a way to support Pod Dylan. It's a way to support the network. And it will not be the first, but it will not be the only bonus episode that Pod Dylan's going to start creating going forward. So to get that episode, and it'll probably drop about midweek, and there will be a normal episode the following Saturday. So if you want to hear that episode with me and Matt, and God knows I want to hear more of Matt talking about Band of the Hand, again, go to fmpods.com and click the subscription button and you can sign up. It's only $4.99 a month, and you will get all the other great stuff that's on the network, and you will start getting the Pod Dylan premium episode. So please go over to fmpods.com. Again, the link is in the show notes, and subscribe, and then you'll be able to get that bonus show. So Matt, as we're wrapping up here, I've been asking everybody the normal exit questions, but since you were on the show relatively recently, I think I've asked you both the questions that I've normally been doing. So I'm throwing you a different one. I didn't prepare you for this. I hope you don't mind.
No problem. This is
something I mentioned over on Twitter. So a couple of weeks ago, in this scenario, Bob himself has called you over to his house to watch a movie, and you get to pick the movie. What movie would you want to sit down with Bob and watch? And you can come at it from whatever angle you want. It could be something you think he'd enjoy, something you love that you want to share with him, however you want to approach it. But what I know, there's a gajillion movies to pick from. It's a big question, and I know I'm throwing it at you unprepared, but I think you can handle it. Is there a movie you think you would, Bob's like, whatever you want. And it doesn't matter if it's available in this fantasy scenario, it's available. What movie would you might want to show you watch with Bob Dylan?
Wow, I haven't thought about this. I'm just quickly thinking that I'd watch anything with him. But I think one movie that is one of my personal favorites, top five movie for me all time, that I think he would relate to and appreciate, and I would love to get his take on, is Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood.
Great movie.
I remember watching that when I was growing up and kind of coming of age, and I think it's, you know, the story of a man coming to terms with who he is, that his nature and his environment, and an environment that changes, and his struggle to create himself in the way that he wants to be, and the force of the world pushing back against that. And I think that's something Bob could probably see himself in a time or two and reflect on. And just there's some amazing lines in that movie as well that, you know, I would expect, you know, to show up in Bob Dylan song someday. Deserves got nothing to do with it. it's a hell of a thing killing a man. I assume you've seen the movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Anyone who doesn't want to get shot better get on out the back. And then he shoots the guy and he's unarmed and he's like, yeah, congratulations, you just shot an unarmed man. Well, he should have armed himself.
He should have armed himself.
Decorate his saloon with my friend. I mean, I could see Bob Dylan saying something like that. So, yeah, I'd sit down and watch Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven with Bob, and we'd have a heck of a time.
That is a marvelous answer. That's it's got all sorts of themes you understand Bob could chew on. We know he loves Westerns. So that's a terrific answer. That's an absolute. He probably friends with Clint Eastwood in some bizarro way that we don't know about or something. That's a great answer. I love it. I know I threw that to you unprepared, but that's a marvelous answer. So awesome. Well, Matt, thank you for doing this. This was such a joy. I loved being able to delve into this just totally obscure little corner of the Bob Dylan universe. And I am looking so forward to us talking about the movie. That is just going to be a blast. I will admit, at the time of this recording, I have not seen the movie in 30 years. I watched it when I worked at the video store. We'll talk about this on that episode, but I rented it from the video store that I worked at because I was like, oh, this is the Bob Dylan movie. And I was like, oh, it's not a very good movie. And then I've never watched it again since. So this will be a new viewing for me. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation. So thank you so much for coming back and doing this with me.
Oh, absolutely, Rob. And for everyone still listening, make sure you tune in next week. Subscribe and spend the week listening to Band of the Hand. And as a teaser, to encourage you to tune in, you will find out who Mr. Pussyman is. And you'll see who the witchcraft scum are and get a tour of the House of Voodoo. And if you make it and find a copy of the movie, then you'll be all caught up and you'll get the attachment to the movie and the song. That's not so obvious if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, the movie is available by, I should mention everybody, on various streaming platforms. It's also on Blu-ray, oddly, amazingly enough. It is on Blu-ray, but you can stream it on Amazon Prime for like $3.99. So you can find it. It's out there. There's clips of it on YouTube and things like that. Oh, supposedly there is they made a video for the song. Now mm-hmm. it doesn't feature Bob. It features clips from the movie. I was not able to find that either on YouTube. The actual released video, which is a damn shame. As far as I saw from the Blu-ray, again, we should be talking about this on the movie episode, but apparently on the Blu-ray has like no special features. At the very least, it should have the video. Video. Come on, guys. What are you doing? You know, for Pete's sake. But yes, everybody, please go again to fmpods.com and look up the subscription tab and sign up for Pod Dylan Premium, and you will get this bonus show. It is really going to be an enormously fun conversation between me, Matt, and again, another Pod Dylan regular. So again, Matt, thank you so much for coming back. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter at MattSimo9 and mostly post about Bob Dylan and pretty much it. Look me up, follow me, I'll follow you back, and we can have a discussion about anything related to Bob that you want. Always looking for fellow fans and nut jobs, as I say, who just love to dive into the far corners and reaches of the catalog.
Absolutely. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you later. Bye. Oh, by the way, let me ask your opinion. Should I do It's Hell Time Man 4 times? Or should I just do it once?
You have to do it 4 times.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'll sound like a jackass, but what else is new? All right, cool. All right. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.